Blog Talk Radio.
It is Sunday, November 15th, 2015, 6:30 p.m. I'm Grant and Taylor Hughes for my show, The Grant and Taylor Hughes Show, with my guest host each week, Gabriella Foster. Hi, Gabriella. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about yourself, Grant?
I'm fine. Can you hear me all right?
I can. You sound just fine.
I have this new smartphone, so I have had it for a couple months, but there's always something new to sort. This microphone sometimes comes in muffled when I do the analysis of the show. Anyway, having said all that, and editorializing at the beginning of the show, you're never supposed to do that, correct?
As we know.
But it would be funny to the listeners. So that would be classified as a joke, right?
Mm-hmm. We always try to start with a joke.
That's correct. Start with a joke, get everybody's riveted attention upon the great subject matter that we talk about each week, which is, you know, the dry matter of the 1930 Geneva Convention, bankruptcy, right? And we always stay on that subject, correct?
Ha, ha, ha.
Does that mean that it's funny? The subject's funny?
No, that means we're lucky if we do stay on the subject.
Very lucky. But we do the very level best to do that, as you now know.
That's absolutely right.
But we've been doing this shows for about 9 years, haven't we? Something like that. About,
gosh,
since 2007.
Been that long. Mm.
It's
wow.
Amazing how time flies when you're having fun, right?
That's true.
Or is it time flies, you catch more honey by catching flies? Or you catch more honey with flies? If time flies, right?
Time flies when you're eating honey.
Ah, now I get that. But then again, that's controversial as far as raw vegans are concerned. In terms of eating honey. Because it's pre-digested by flies, bees. Flies don't eat honey, right?
Yes, but I'm
so
not
what
sure
that?
what the bees do with the honey. Yeah.
So that whole analogy falls apart. Shouldn't it be you catch more bees with honey?
You do catch something with honey.
Ah, I see. But do flies eat honey? I guess so. I don't know.
I don't know. Can we go
on
to another subject?
So we wasted about 5 minutes. Oh, we can? Oh, I mean, we want to get on our subject, right?
Yeah, can we get on to another subject? Any subject probably would be preferable.
Or a subject, right?
Or a subject of some sort.
Well, okay, each week, and that's a deep subject, right? The old well routine?
Well, I suppose so.
So that would be a subject then. So we started out by talking about wells. All right, I'll try to move along. We talk about generally, or more specifically, we attempt to talk about the international bankruptcy, which I know usually bores most people, but the truth of the matter is, and we've mentioned this many, many times, so the reiteration of it, well, to me it's not boring because it seems like there's always something else that comes out on the topic because of the fact that most people don't realize that the money we have is debt. Like the dollars that we spend in America are debt currency. It's not credit. And so far as when people talk about credit rating, it really should be a debt rating, but they aren't coming to that in terms of vernacular. In other words, there are a lot of things that are politically correct, as they say, but politically incorrect would say that the revelation that we're in a bankruptcy because then they're concerned with the masses' reaction. In other words, if all the newspapers were talking about what we talk about, they're afraid of the mass uprising business or the mass reaction. I mean, you understand what I mean by that, correct?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
I know you like those one-word answers. That's why I specifically do that.
me up, right? So that would allude to the fact that I really shouldn't be talking about this, or is it okay to talk about the truth, as I say? I mean, but is the truth in a back room somewhere in privacy, or is the truth should be in the public? So, I mean, that's an interesting topic in itself, just the whole idea that when we politicize things, is it just falsehood or window dressing for the truth? Or you understand what I mean? In other words, why isn't there truth in the marketplace? And because we, and is it true that what is going on the truth, I'll say? Or is that an adequate question to discuss?
What are we talking about? I mean,
what things that go
on are the truth? There's a lot of different things happening. To what specifically do you refer?
Well, the three elements that I talk about in reference to theory, law, and practice. All right,
mm-hmm.
So what's in practice looks like it's not practicing the law. If I separate the category, I didn't infer that it didn't. I mean, you could start from the theory trickling down to law and practice, and they're all work in practice. That would be a nice idea. But often in practice, they don't do the law issue. But what is the law? I mean, Sunday morning, I have a political discussion with a group in the UK, and it's becoming more of an international call, but there's many people on the call. And it gets down to this discussion about what is the law that's in practice, all right? Then we've talked many times and clarified that we're in a bankruptcy. So bankruptcy law would be called public policy. So it's public bankruptcy policy of Section 1 of the Uniform Commercial Code, and that's why when people are looking for my show, they usually have to categorize it under law, but I like to have it under politics because I intersperse law and politics together because I think they do, just like political economics has economics and politics intermingled. So there's a lot of intermingling of subject matter. But I prefer that this would be more of a political category because politics means governing and we're all about the government on our own shoulders taking responsibility as an individual, in my opinion. And that's part of the truth too in itself. In other words, what we're doing in reference of clouding over or covering, I wouldn't call it cover-up, I would call it a traditional snafu, if you will, because we're getting away from what is the law. Like I often ask people the question, I say, what law do we use in the courtroom? And most generally, people don't even answer the question. They don't even attempt to answer it. But obviously, if there's a court, then there's got to be some basis for what it is in law, all right? And then I can ask you that question, then you would answer it, well, obviously, because you know, in terms of Uniform Commercial Code. They use that in the courtroom, but then the irony is they deny its existence. So let's go back to one of the basics. Why do they deny the existence of the UCC in the courtroom if it is a law that they use? Why do they do that, Gabriella?
Because their verdicts and judgments can be trumped by Uniform Commercial Code statutes.
Okay, that's true. There's a remedy for that in Section 10. Section 10 is hard to find. There's only 10 sections to the UCC. But primarily, the issue is because we're in a bankruptcy and they can't reveal it. See, so the remedy for that is UCC 1-308 that puts them on notice that we're aware of the fact of the non-revelation of the UCC and they can't reveal it because they're concerned again for this mass uprising or the revolution type thing. Because we're hot off many revolutions in the past couple of centuries, there's a great concern for that infrastructurally, that the masses could uprise and cause a revolution. So there's a sensitive issue with that. That's why some of the information I give is private and probably will stay private. And I'm not expecting to go into the newspapers or online in terms of great revelation because it's let's put it this way, I don't think it'll happen. And I'm not interested in that. All I'm interested in is we seek the truth, we talk about the truth, and then we try to integrate as much as possible without being adversarial. Because there are, people know if they've listened to my call, my slogan is work with and not against. That's W-I-T-H, the preposition. I know I'm ending a phrase with a preposition, but people do it all the time, ending sentences with prepositions. All right, so there's a grammar issue. We're worth with each other and not against. I could make the slogan more grammatically correct. So this whole idea of working together is very important. And I truly mean that. I'm not doing that as a political correct agenda by any means, because the whole idea is if we don't work together, then we've got retrogression and dissolution and death, if you will. And that's not healthy for society, in my opinion. But I don't think we came into this world to destroy it, but I think there's an undertow that does take place in terms of power struggle, in terms of negativity. I truly believe that that happens, and sometimes it's unconscious, and it's tradition passed on without respect to the facts in the matter, and then we become channels for negativity without really knowing it. For instance, most people think they're doing everything that's adequate. They're not really conscious of trying to be criminal or negative. See, I don't really believe people are consciously trying to do that. I think they make mistakes. I think there's a lot of misfeasance that takes place, but not a lot of malfeasance, which would be cold-blooded negativity. I think that's very rare. I think that's a criminal mind that believes there's no other way around it than to be that way, and I think that's very rare. I think even some of these people that are doing these negative things don't really want to do it. They believe they have a positive agenda, which is, again, who's to say? You know, it's kind of like my son when he was a kid, he was watching a war picture, and he said to me, and he said, Daddy, which are the good guys and the bad guys? So I paused and I gave it pause and I answered and I said, it depends on what side you're on. You see, so it's a matter of opinions. It's a matter of particular viewpoints that people have and will continue to have, and then our fielding of what we consider to be the truth in the matter. That's why I have a problem with some of the traditional education, because then it's not questioned enough. Because it becomes a time issue. Like in the schoolhouse, you only have a certain amount of time, and so they have a curriculum, and they want to stay to it, that's in a timing segment or timing mode that they can't get away from, and so therefore the children are subject to inadequacy because they can't ask the questions because they're subject to time elements, time constraints, I'll say. So that becomes a big issue of getting to points and questioning to extrapolate details that are sorely missed in traditional information, because it's a generality, and the motive of it, especially in the West here, and the DuPont started public education in America, and their motive was just to put people into the factory and put them to work. It wasn't really to educate them and give them a broad-based horizontal of all subjects and information. That wasn't their design to do that. Because the DuPonts were a wealthy family, but they're not the wealthiest family, and they were actually pretty much controlling the state of Delaware. If people will look at the top of the Delaware state, you can see about an eighth of an arc where Pierre DuPont was going to make a circular state. So I make this joke in the past, and then he passed away, and maybe fortunately in that case, and I don't mean negativity upon him, but can you imagine if he would have gotten his way, there would have been a circle there. You're looking at all these square states in the West, and all of a sudden your eye goes to this circular state, and you go, whoa, what happened there, see? You know? Would have been weird to see a circular state, right? Circular border right there?
Yeah.
Well, then you look at Paris, it's built in a circle. Napoleon built the Arc de Triomphe, and they had eight roads to the center there, see? And then you got Washington, D.C. is built in a circle also. Because it's one of the best ways to defend against foreign invasion. Because, as people know, if you go into these circular cities, it's hard to find the center, isn't it? I mean, every time I go to D.C., I get lost constantly. It's like, what is going on here, you know? So it's very amusing about that, but it works, the whole idea. And that was what Pierre DuPont was doing at one time, and then... Because if you look at the top of the Delaware and that curve, it's really odd when you really pay attention to what's happening there and look on a map border and see it, it's very strange. But very few people bring that up in conversation and discussion. But there's a detail that's missed in reference to things that are in practice, and we can see it on a constant basis, but then they don't even question its empiricism of what it is in reference to its manifestation. So you see, that of itself is an obvious situation, but not obvious when we're not observing things correctly. So that's what I'm trying to say in terms of the details that are missed in traditional education is a real problem because of time constraints. And you know that in terms of our discussions of the talons of time, right, Gabriella?
Yes. Are you going to talk about the talons of time?
Well, I mean, I'm just bringing that up because it was a name of a book by a mentor of mine, which was a novel, really, of saying the whole problem with manifestation is a measurement of duration and time, the constraints of time. He had a character called a time maker. They come in and create time, and then that puts a lot of constraints on the idea of getting a thorough education. Because if you can't ask a lot of questions, you can't question your teachers, not disrespecting them, but questioning them to enhance or to bring out all the information on a particular subject. Like physics, for instance, or chemistry. I'll use that example of the first element is nitrogen, which I brought to the table in my chemistry class and said the first element is nitrogen. It has two elements, right? And I was always arguing the point that you can't have an element with two, you can't have a molecule with two elements. You have to have three elements. So when they talk about an electron and a proton being the only elements of nitrogen, I said, how does that work? How do they suspend in space without a neutron, without kind of glue in the middle, like there's a middle part called a neutron? They said, well, that's heavy hydrogen. It's radioactive. And I went, time out. I said, that's so ridiculous. The basic element doesn't exist correctly in the extrapolation of it. And then all other elements are based upon that original one. What does that mean? But with the other 119 elements in chemistry that are on the periodic table means they're all inadequate, right? So they don't want to hear that. See, they don't want to have to start all over again. They've got a tradition that's been around for so long, and then I come in and synthesize it on day one. You see what I mean? So that makes me say that I'm the recommendabus, or anybody can be that way if they ask the hard questions. And not even a hard question, just an obvious question that they're not going to answer because they have been passing this down a long time as tradition, and here it is. But again, a lot of people do postgraduate work and are famous in history for denying people like Newtonian physics and what have you. We have quantum physics. But in this whole idea of these subjects that I'm talking about, that most are sorely inadequate and they're not advanced except in postgrad work, and then we don't see PhD treatises. They go on file, and they're actually in registries and colleges and what have you. But you don't really know because they're not publicly put into the agenda of our daily vernacular. See, that becomes the issue. The issue is that our daily vernacular, they make jokes about it in terms of, well, movies like Pleasantville and the 1950s were supposed to be naive time. But the social manifestation, just like they call it public and private, like they call the private sector business, the public sector government, but then they're saying, well, the word public means something exposed, so that means the government's only exposed and all private sector work, we don't know anything about it, right? We don't know anything about business. So that's what I'm trying to say. What is the interest level of the participation of the people, and what is the information that they deem inadequate or adequate in reference to their opinions? You see, when people start talking, do they have enough information that they can continue with a certain subject and stay on the subject and have a lot of detail so that it can be in an education mode when there's major problems in our society as they are today? But not to say that there aren't in other societies as well, even more golden times, there's always issues because you're dealing with the polarities of negative and positive points. And an interpretation. Everybody has their opinion, and That becomes a negative connotation because they say, well, that's just your opinion. They keep saying that's just your opinion. They keep repeating it like some kind of sword that strikes you down. See, it becomes a negative issue that someone has an opinion. When in reality, you should be elevating that opinion because it's a very unique and important part of the puzzle. Like every human being is a part of the puzzle. And that's why I'll use that analogy that everyone has borders next to each other in those puzzles. Like if you look at those large puzzles, 1,000-piece puzzles, and then you see all the different cut-out borders, they're all different. There's never any one the same. And if there are, then they would be spaced apart from each other far away, and that would be because it's made from a machine, and they'll have certain molds and cutouts. But the analogy holds in terms of everybody has their due. They're different. It's relative. And the relativity should be allowed in terms of compassionate sounding board work. In other words, we're listening attentively, and then we see where it fits into the puzzle. You see what I mean? It's unique and different, but it doesn't mean it's inadequate and not necessary. See, that's the whole issue. It's like the condemnation of participation is a major problem. In other words, if people can't adequately speak the language or have an intonation that's acceptable or a style that's acceptable and have no substance. So I'm just saying those combinations of style and substance is very important, but who has that? And who's willing to put themselves on the line to give that expression or information when we're dealing with a lot of emotional issues here? Like people get up there. Well, there was a book by Pastor Newhouse, who was a friend of William F. Buckley, who is a very well-known editor of a magazine. What was the name of that magazine? I forget it sometimes. It's well-known. I don't remember offhand. I apologize for that. But yeah. And anyway, so Pastor Newhouse wrote a book, The Naked Public Square. And in it, he was saying people need to come to the public square to voice their opinions. But it doesn't really just work that way. Because when we get up in an alien entity where people really don't care about your opinion, it's like cutting through a forest with a machete. You see, I mean, it's really difficult because there's emotional issues. And that's the problem because of the fact that humans are under the burden of these emotions. And if the form isn't an agreeable situation, it's going to be very difficult to speak into that. You see what I mean? So to get in an agenda that you want to give a pertinent opinion or even your unique take on it, unless one is educated and a certain grammar structure, it's going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult, and that's why when they just doff these things out and say, oh, come to the public square, we really want to hear what you have to say, well, people aren't going to do it. And that was not something that took place in terms of there was an inadequacy of explaining how to come there in terms of nurturing them on the way so that they can be comfortable when they get to that public square to give their opinion. See, that whole thing about regression therapies and all that stuff that came out of that so that people can give their opinion and be responsible to state it when they can't, you see. I'm always picking on Landmark and talking about Scientology, and if they were doing a really adequate job, then people could really have these discussions in public and not be injured because of it. I mean injured emotionally. I don't mean injured party physical injury, but I'm talking emotional injury, which is abstract. You know, I can't prove that, but I know that in my own experience when I was younger, I had those experiences, emotional experiences, not being able to adequately talk into an entity. You know, it's difficult. You know, you feel like you're underwater drowning or something, and people probably can relate to that in terms of public presentations and public discussions. They're not willing to do it because they're afraid of making errors. They're afraid of their style. Just like I'm on my style. I sort of whine when I talk, and I wish I would be more resonant with things, but I get excited and this whole type of thing in terms of the topic. So you see, that of itself, in terms of confidence level, you have your style and substance. You combine those two, it's a very powerful statement to make if you're being accountable for the logic that you're dealing with. The problem I have is a lot of people that are leaders and just speakers are not accountable for their logic. In other words, they're not getting enough of the questions to be asked specifically in terms of expanding on their information. Or just like, I said earlier, the previous aforementioned subject matters of tradition are not getting their accountable questions as well. See, in other words, they're allowing for the falsehoods to be passed on, just like I was saying in reference to chemistry. And that probably never happened. You see what I mean? They'll continue with that falsehood and not change it because it's in the superstructure. It would cost them plenty to change all the textbooks and what have you. It was the same issue when they were trying to change the paradigm with the United Nations to the azimuthal equidistant projection, which they never were able to do that because it was going to be a multi-million dollar agenda for the government at the time of the Roosevelt administration. Then he died and they ended the whole thing and didn't bother with changing to the new paradigm because they would have to change the textbooks, the constructs or the content of the textbooks. They didn't want to do it because it was a very expensive undertaking. And so there you have it. So then we say, well, the truth gets impaled on a money issue. It does. It really does. That's the sad part about it, that a lot of truth is lost because you can't afford to express it. I mean, is that ridiculous or what, Gabriella?
Yeah, I mean, it's people don't tell the truth very often, I think. Businesses especially, because then they get into a lot of trouble. So even though I think in America we have this idea that everybody's truthful and honest, but in reality, everybody's extremely materialistic, and the truth sort of goes by the wayside sometimes because of that.
Well, I think that's a very good opinion, because you really don't have any time to get into the details of our practices and methodology. In other words, we're too busy going to Neiman Marcus and buying nice things and spending lots of money on produce, right?
Well, yeah, but you don't buy produce at Neiman and Marcus. That's someplace else.
Did that sound like I was alluding to that? Did Neiman Marcus get into produce recently? I thought maybe they were at a new agenda or something.
Okay, now.
That's really funny, isn't it? But having said that, I think your opinion in terms of your view, according to what people are in reference to their materialism, I agree with that. And therefore, if you're materialistic, you just want stuff. You know, you want food, shelter, and clothing, and an abundance of it. That's fine. I'm not against that increase aspect of the perpetual law of increase. I'm very much aware of that involved. But at the same time, sometimes it's good to know the source of the information to be aware of it so that you're feeling adequate, like you're not escaping into materialism. If you're escaping into materialism, you're losing your way, and you know you're lost, right? But you don't want to address, as I said, in terms of the truth of the matter. And it's all about information. You get the information and not overwhelmed by it. See, I think that is mostly what we have in the world today, is this overwhelming influx of data and information bombardment by advertising and the internet and blah, 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 all of that, okay? All right, so we're getting down to the last minute. Gabriella, thanks for being on the show. I appreciate you being here each week.
Okay, you're quite welcome. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm glad you think it's okay.
Well, I'm not sure. I know there's not much time left. I don't know what else you want me to say at this point, but thank you. Anyway.
That's fine. I appreciate it. Well, it's a killing time, right? That's what it is, a catharsis of killing time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the last 30 seconds seemed like an eternity sometimes. It's pretty funny. As you watch the timekeeper, and that's me watching the time slip away, as it said, right? All right, so we're down to the last few seconds. I want to thank everybody for being here on the show, and the journeymen and the new people. This is Grant and Taylor Hughes for my show that we have each week. I'll see you next week. Have a great week, and goodbye for now. I'm going to try to call Emily. So I haven't talked in a couple of weeks. It'll only be, maybe, you know, 15 minutes most.
No problem. Go ahead.
Okay. It doesn't mean she'll necessarily answer, but I do want to try her. Okay.